Tell Me Your Story is the name of the program. I'm Richard Dugan. That's the name of the host. And today we're going to be talking with the author of The Call. And her name is Toni Elizabeth Surratt. And we're going to be talking about DNA reconstruction and basically moving forward in our lives to create new paradigms for a new world, your world, to make it a better place for you, for me, for everyone that lives here. We are here together, so let's make the best of it.
Walk with me, talk with me, tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Understanding is indeed the name of the game. I'm Richard Dugan, and Toni, it's great to have you on the program, and it's a joy to have the opportunity to talk about a lot of these different things that you're into, not only The Call, which its subtitle is Awakening the Angelic Human, and we're going to get definition and of terms here in just a moment, but also the CD that accompanies it or that can go along with it, the DNA Reawakening, and we'll talk more about that. But thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's my pleasure to be here again. We had such a wonderful time the last time. It's wonderful to be back.
Well, I want to let our listeners know that if they want to get further information, they can either go through richarddugan.com, and there is a link on the schedules and the shows page to your website, as well as the previous interview that you and I did back about a month ago. But also, you can go to Sacred Spaces. And that's sacredspaces.org, if I'm not, or .com, I beg your pardon.
.com, uh-huh.
Sacred Spaces
Law. Actually, Sacred Spaces
right.
Law. W-A for Washington.
For Washington.
Space
and
Law.
You're sitting right now on an island off of the Washington coast, and that's got to be a wonderful place to be as well. And we'll talk a little bit about how you wound up there and how that may even facilitate the process of, shall we say, communicating with and coexisting with, if you will, the orbs that we are going to also find out a little bit more about as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay right where you are. If you'd like to give us a call, our phone lines will be open in just a little bit. The number is 564-1290, 564-1290. Or outside the area, if you are listening on the internet, 866-564-1290. Stay with us. This is Tell Me Your Story. My guest, Toni Elizabeth Surratt, author of The Call. Tell me your story, please. We'd like to know where you're coming from. Toni Elizabeth Surratt of Sacred Spaces, WA.com, has joined us with her book, The Call and the DNA Reawakening. We want to, first of all, let you know that she comes to us, of course, from off of an island off of the coast of Washington State. And that's got to be a wonderful place to live and be, especially in these, what I guess we could say, I don't know whether I want to say alleged trying times or they're really trying times or how to define them, but thank you again for joining us.
Interesting times.
Interesting times.
Like the Chinese blessing / curse.
Okay.
You live in interesting times.
And we do indeed. Tell me a little bit about your background as far as getting involved with this process of the reawakening of the DNA, and in particular, the angelic humans. What are angelic humans?
Angelic humans are, if we break down what the words mean, humans. We know what humans are. Homo sapien is the wise man. And the word angel means messenger. So we're talking about the human being who realizes as they awaken what the message is that they have brought to this planet. So it's not about suddenly sprouting wings and flying around with a halo, which are nothing but pictures of what people used to believe angels were. It's about each person awakening to the realization that they have come here for a specific purpose. And it doesn't have to be like they're going to change the world or they're going to heal everybody or any of the great things that the ego personality actually wants to take on. It's more about the message that they bring as a particle of, with lack of a better word, God, Source, the ineffable. And each being has that awareness within them. And where it lies within the body, and this is something that I work with and do workshops on and talk about a lot, is within the heart. The heart itself holds the essence of the message that's encoded within the DNA within the body. So when we begin to awaken to that message, then we learn to listen to our heart's message, which I call the voice of the soul, and we are able to function and actually portray that particular part of our personality from that standpoint. Now, though that sounds like, well, yeah, sure, okay, it's hard for people to do that because we have been trained, especially in our culture and in some of the other, you know, European cultures, more so than, say, for instance, South America. We've been trained to be multitasking. We've been trained to be very linear in our thinking, calculating, always figuring out what the next move is, planning for the future, goal-oriented. And all of those particular aspects really deprive us from the ability to be quiet enough to hear what our heart has to say.
And how did you get involved in all of this from, what were the beginnings?
Oh, dear. Okay.
I've opened Pandora's box.
Well, it's like, this is a long story. I like to say I came prepackaged this way. It wasn't as though somebody instructed me in all of this, short of the fact that the book was basically downloaded into me. I didn't have to work very hard to write that book at all. The information was simply transmitted to me, and my fingers did it. But aside from that aspect, I came here to this planet knowing the connection that we all have, that we sometimes forget, people call it that amnesia, with the quote-unquote other side. So for me, it was always about being in this realm and another realm at the same time and balancing those two aspects. By the time I was 12, I asked my mother if I could become a cloistered nun because it was getting to be too hard to live in the world the way the world is, and I was being raised as a very strict, old-time Catholic, Roman Catholic girl in the old Catholic Church, and there's no space in that church at all for anything that is mystical, even though they revere the saints, etc. In this day and age, there are no saints. People are not allowed mysticism, and that's the category it would fall into. So she asked the bishop if he would allow me to become a nun at 12, and he said, well, for the summer, between her 12th and 13th year, I'll allow her to do that. She can go into the Carmelite cloister. I was in Reno, Nevada, where there's a Carmelite cloister, and she can live with the sisters there and see if that's what she wants to do. Well, my mother, being an extremely smart woman, purchased horses that summer, and at the same dinner that she announced to my sister and me that, yes, the bishop had said I could do this, she also announced the purchase of the horses and said that, you know, while you're, Tony, while you're in the cloister this summer, your sister and I will be horseback riding, and I'll save your horse for you. Don't worry about it. It's not going anywhere. Well, what 12-year-old girl doesn't want a horse? And I thought to myself, you know, if I ride out in the Nevada desert on my horse, and that's what I'm doing, and rather than having to be in the day-to-day of a busy life, earth life, that would be as good as being in the cloister, because it's not about a vocation to become a nun. It's about wanting to be in a place where I don't have to talk to people, and I can actually live more in these realms that are much more familiar to me. So I didn't go in the cloister, and I did spend the summer and many more summers riding a horse and went forward with my life from that standpoint. And when I was about 18, I moved to California, to San Francisco, and I met up with a holy order there, the Holy Order of Mans, which is no longer in existence, that was based on Eastern mysticism and Catholicism. And that was perfect for me because you had the Catholic Mass, you had communion, and you had Eastern traditions of different initiations, meditation. And the master teacher, Master Paul, who had created this order, when I began talking to him in my first interviews to go into this particular order and told him about myself, he understood me. And it was the first person in my life who ever understood what I was talking about. And he said, not only do I understand what you're saying, I can take you further. And he was right. So that was like a launching pad for me, and it was a foundation so that I didn't feel that I was alone, because until that time, nobody really wanted to discuss my world with me at all because it didn't fit anywhere. And now all of a sudden, I had all of these people who not only wanted to discuss it, but were actually looking up to me, which was kind of an awe-inspiring moment. And I immediately became one of the teachers in the order. It didn't take any time at all because I knew what they were teaching. It was my life. And I was there for several years, and then I left, and I began working on my own. So it's been this progression of my own creation, because I feel we all create our own worlds, of bringing myself further and further to a place where I can actually say, yes, this is the way this world operates. And much as you and I were talking about before this interview, it has so much to do with people's beliefs, where they're coming from, and the ability to actually close their mind to the noise, go into the silence, and be able to hear what their heart has to say. And when the book came in, I was in a position of basically that space. I had been painting my bedroom. I was very quiet. I didn't have anything going on in my mind short of putting paint on a wall. And all of a sudden, this information was there. And I knew that I needed to just sit down and type it. And this was in September of 2002. And by December, the book was published.
Wow.
It was like instant. It took no time at all. So that's kind of a long story of how did I get to that place. And at the same time, my own penchant, my own desires for mental stimulation and research and inspection of, you know, life on planet Earth has all been tied to quantum physics and ancient texts and things of that nature. So it's been a real complete circle of bringing all of this into one place for me.
Mm. And you also, this is what's interesting, is that the circle gets larger, but everybody seems to know everybody in the circle, because one of our guests coming up in a couple of 3 weeks, you know, you're very familiar with, Flo Magdalena.
Yes.
And we're going to be talking with her as well in a couple of weeks. And you've also met with Greg Braden, who we've had on this program and who we'll have on again in June. And it's interesting that it's like everybody is coming from a different point of view, and they're all heading towards the same thing.
Oh, and it's so fun to watch, because I watched, like, these people you've mentioned and Bruce Lipton. I knew Bruce Lipton before anybody even knew he existed. And I'd say, Bruce, you got to go out there. You got to go out and do this. And we'd talk on the phone, and he'd say, I do not want to be in the public eye. And now he's like, you know, a household word, and he and Greg have teamed up and done some great work together, and now he's going over to Egypt with Nikki Scully, and he's out there, and we're all saying the same thing, like you said. Everybody's saying, bringing the same message about beliefs, the heart actually speaking for our soul, and how it all ties, and it's beginning to be more and more apparent, to science. So those have always been, you know, those two opposing poles, science and mysticism, and now it seems like they're coming together.
And I'm wondering, because the thought just came to me, I worked in my 15 years working for a Christian radio station, whenever there were these controversial subjects that came up, there was always a position taken against, usually, because it didn't conform with, at that time, the beliefs of that particular religion. So now I'm wondering, what kind of, if any, flack or resistance are you and others like you getting, or is it really openly being embraced by a lot of people in realms that you wouldn't have expected before?
Well, yes to both of those questions, or both of those parts of the question. I think that I'm often very surprised when I'll be speaking to somebody who I have observed being, you know, pretty conventional or having a specific religious belief or being pretty mainstream, and all of a sudden I find we're much more on the same page than I thought we were, and I find that it's usually due to my being very vulnerable and open and surrendering to not having to change that person, simply telling them where I am.
Yeah.
You know, however the conversation comes about, you know, whatever we're talking about. So if they're talking about something, say, for instance, the war in Iraq, and if I say, well, in my world there is no war.
Mm-hmm.
They want to know why I say that. Now, sometimes people get upset because they want you to buy into it. And at the same time, that opens the door to asking them why they're so upset about it and why I'm supposed to buy into it. So, you know, you using discernment, you want to find your way through the similar language with a person so that you find the path of least resistance to talking with them. And on the other hand, then there's also people who just basically don't want to hear about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it takes two people to get into an argument. So if somebody wants to take on a debate, I'm usually not open to that. I'll usually just stop talking because there isn't any reason to get into a debate with somebody.
And usually,
as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and usually they're coming from a place of fear in terms of not wanting to hear about it because they're comfortable where they are. It has nothing to do with what you have to share. It's because you're now trying, from their perception probably, you're trying to take them out of their comfort zone.
Exactly.
And far be it from any of us here on this program to do that. All we're doing is putting the information out there. And what we're putting out there today is your work, Tony Elizabeth Seurat. The book is The Call. Basically, it is Awakening the Angelic Human. And we're also talking about, and we're going to talk about that more in the second half of our program, the orbs. Is this a new phenomenon, the orbs?
No, not really. They tell me they've been here always, and that we simply haven't been able to see them. Since I have become involved with them, and people are emailing me all the time about it, there was one woman who emailed me, and she said that she's been seeing them for 40 years. Well, I've been seeing them for, 18 years or something like that. So people have been seeing them much longer than we would believe, and they just didn't have any place to discuss it. I mean, if they said they're seeing light orbs, they probably would be put into a mental institution, so they just kept their mouth shut. And I believe that the mass consciousness flux of seeing it actually began probably around the mid-90s, and I came upon them somewhere around 1996 or so. And the availability of people being able to see them and speak with them and have them present on a day-to-day basis is much greater than people really realize. And I feel that the only reason that they don't take advantage of it more or actually even believe it, talking about belief systems, is because they don't have a space in their belief system for something that isn't physical, that is conscious, that can telepathically communicate with you and is non-judgmental and totally loving. There's no place for it to fit.
Yeah. And by the way, I find it interesting that people who take positions and want to prove that their beliefs are true, my understanding was that a belief was not based on anything tangible, that you believed it because you chose to believe it.
Yes,
not because
exactly.
You had a rock that said, this is what I believe, you know.
Right, you're
you know?
Right.
And that when you do get facts, guess what? That belief is no longer a belief. Now it's knowledge. Now you
now
know
it's
it.
Knowledge. Right.
And
a lot of people will find that if they will ask the orbs to come and appear for them, then all of a sudden it will become knowledge, and then they will say, well, you can't tell me that you have to have a digital camera to take a picture of an orb because I have seen them with my physical eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden the whole thing changes.
Mm-hmm.
But until they have the experience, they're not going to have it as part of their knowledge system. And until they allow themselves to believe it, it will not become part of their knowledge system.
Yeah.
They're stopping themselves. So it's about believing first to come to the knowledge,
yeah.
Being open to the availability that is there.
Yeah, that was the position I took also, was I was never going to discount someone's experience in spite of what they told me they believed, because in many instances it was so fascinating that the person's experience sometimes actually went against their belief, and now they had to reevaluate their belief, and that's what we do throughout our lives.
Right, and some people don't reevaluate their beliefs, because the thing that happens with reevaluating your beliefs is if you reevaluate one of them and that one proves to be incorrect and you have to change it, all the rest that you have are hinged on that one.
Uh-oh.
And then the whole thing topples down. And I run into this all the time because I do little presentations on Zachariah Sitchin's work. I don't know if you're familiar with him or not. He translated the Sumerian tablets. He's wonderful. He's pure science. He's pure linguist, archaeologist. He's wonderful. And he has shown us that the Bible comes from the Babylonian texts, that the things that we in our religions believe God did, a lot of it is in the Sumerian texts, is actually being DNA manipulation by beings who came to this planet. And this isn't like, you know, woo-woo, E.T. came to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
It is written down in the first written language that ever existed. And when I start talking about this with people, and I show them the books, and he's written like 12, 13 books, and I say, here, just read one, they get so scared that they don't want to get into it anymore, because they realize if they say that Zechariah is right on one point, if you discounted 99% of what he said and you said 1% was correct, that means everything you believe isn't true.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you remove one stone and it starts to weaken the entire wall. We're going to take another short break here. We're going to come back and talk more about this and the orbs, and possibly even be able to have an opportunity to talk with and ask some questions. If you'd like to give us a call, 564-1290. That's the that's the number. Tell Me Your Story is the name of the program. My guest, Tony Elizabeth Surratt, and the website is sacredspaceswa.com. The views expressed are not necessarily those of the staff, management, ownership, or advertisers of this station. This is Tell Me Your Story. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. If you'd like to give us a call, the number is 866-564-1290. That's the number outside the area if you're listening on the internet. Or you can give us a call here at 564-1290. That's 564-1290 here in Santa Barbara, Central Coast area. I want you to stay tuned. We have more coming up with Tony Elizabeth Surratt and The Call. Stay tuned. Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. My guest, Tony Elizabeth Surratt. She has a website, and it is sacredspaceswa.com. Sacredspaceswa.com. And Tony, let's introduce, if we can, to our listeners the orbs, and maybe get a little background as far as their purpose and intent in coming here and intermixing, or how, I'm not sure how I want to phrase this, communing with and relating to humans.
Okay. I became aware of them somewhere around 96, 97, and one of them, I had seen a webpage that said something about light orbs, and I was kind of reading it, and I hadn't run into this before, and it said that they would appear and they would be with you any place, any time. And this was just something that this man had been told by the light orbs. So he had put up this webpage. So I decided to invite them to come to me, and they did. And one of them appeared in my bedroom. I saw it with my naked eye, no cameras. It was huge. It was probably 3 feet by 2 feet. And it was just moving through the bedroom very slowly. And so I knew they were real, and I began to just kind of talk with them myself. And it was kind of private. I didn't make a big deal out of it. And then in 2004, I was at La Push, Washington. It's on the Olympic Peninsula. And they were everywhere. It was, you couldn't move without being immersed in orbs. And so I asked them why, and they said, we would like you to start transmitting information for us, and we're attempting to catch your attention. And I said, well, you've got my attention, and I'll do my best to transmit clearly, except that I need to know more about you. I want to know who you are, because people are going to ask me that. And they said, we are the guardians of your soul. And I said, okay, fine, I'll use that. I didn't ask for any more information than that. And I put that up on my website, and probably 6 months later, a lady emailed me, and she told me that I had brought her peace. And I said, well, emailed back, and I said, that's wonderful. How did I do that? And she said, it's the part about the orbs being the guardians of the soul. And she told me the story about her two sons. An older son, probably early 20s, and then she had a younger son that was like a toddler. And the older son had been gone, and he came back home to Canada, and he told her he had come home to die. And he did die, but before he died, he was only there a couple of days, and then he did die. And before he died, he said, I have to leave now. I'm going to become a guardian of the soul. And he was gone. And then she, you know, was very upset and grieving, et cetera. But after that time, she began, you know, she was taking pictures of her younger son. And every time she took a picture, and she sent me a lot, which I have on my webpage, there's this huge orb surrounding her son, the little one. And those orbs had never been there before. So she feels that this is Nick, her son, the older son, going to be a guardian of the soul, except she didn't know what that was until she had read that they said, we're the guardians of your soul. So I've used that as the definition of what they are, and just recently, within the last few months, actually, they said to me, we would like to add to this. We feel that we are the guardians of your capacity to love. And I actually did a YouTube where they did a transmission for me, and we videotaped it, where they explained what it is to be a guardian of the capacity to love. And what they were talking about was that, going back to what we were talking about, the heart, we all have this capacity to be non-judgmental and to love completely without any thought of what gain we are going to receive from it. And that, by and large, humans are not doing that, or as they call them, the humans, are not doing that, and that they are guarding this treasure chest for each of us, so that as we become aware of the fact that we are capable of doing that, then that treasure within our heart will be ready for us, and that they hover, so to speak. They protect that vibration for us so that it will always be held in its sacredness for us, which I thought was absolutely lovely. Mm. The thing I find about doing these transmissions is that they, as you and I were talking about earlier, do not take life as seriously as most people do. They are very humorous. They're very pragmatic about things that most people would feel are very important, and that they're, you know, it's a life or death situation here kind of a thing. They just don't see it that way because they know how infinite we are.
Mm.
So they come from the infiniteness of us.
So they don't get wrapped up in the dramas down here, do they?
No, they don't at all. They call themselves the, and they said they prefer to be called the emanations from the ineffable.
Okay, emanations from the ineffable.
From the ineffable, and that's what we are too.
Because we're all connected.
We're all connected, and that the ineffable being the creator, and like we were saying earlier, that if as soon as you say God, source, creator, whatever, you've demoted it into a manifested word. So you're talking about something that you can't even really name, which is a little hard sometimes to get the mind wrapped around. And that, we emanate from that, just as they do. So we are God material. We're God stuff.
Mm.
And that's what they are. And they say often, all we are doing is mirroring you. You are looking into a mirror. Except we know what we are, and you do not. Because we believe that we have limitations.
Okay. Now, you also said, too, that there is that part within our hearts that we do know, or maybe not consciously, but it is there and it's accessible to us if we would just but access it.
Yes. And to do that, and this is, there's a whole body of work, scientific work, that's being done in Russia by two German scientists. Bludorf and Fodor are their last names. It revolves around working with the heart, and they're using computers. And what they have found is that our DNA in our body acts like what they're calling a wormhole to bring information from, quote-unquote, other dimensions. So the idea of a wormhole being like a vortex of energy where other energy can come through it and come into our consciousness. And they're using this particular computer program that they've created to prove this, and they have proven it. And what they're saying, and I've read a white paper because the book hasn't been translated into English yet, what they're saying is that for those of you, which is all of us, who do not have our computer program to work with, what you need to know is if you want to be able to do what we are doing with your own body, you have to be able to be still in your mind. That is the cornerstone of being able to access this information.
Yeah, there's a phrase I've never heard before. Still your mind, quiet your mind.
Right, exactly, yes, right.
And, of course, the question that always comes up is, how do you do that?
Well, I know that a lot of people think that meditation is the key. And I don't disagree. I just think that sometimes there's so much emphasis put on meditation that people run from it because it sounds like it's a really hard exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like to tell my clients and the people I work with and the people who come here for retreat, et cetera, is that all you need to do is to, and it takes time, that's the thing, and people don't give themselves the time. You need to take time to simply sit until you can get quiet. That's all meditation really is,
mm-hmm.
is a quieting so that the mind isn't busy. And a lot of people say, well, I just can't quiet down my mind. That's not true. You haven't taken the time to allow your mind to become quiet. Because there's all of these things that need to be tended to.
Yeah. I've also heard that the process of meditation, or so to speak, the purpose thereof, isn't necessarily and exclusively to quiet the mind as much as it is to commune with God, to hear the voice of God. And so here I am, and I'm in my mind, and there are all these voices, and I'm sitting going, shh, quiet, I'm trying to hear God's voice, shh, quiet. And this can go on for hours as you're doing this, and eventually they kind of get the, oh, he wants us to be quiet. Oh, okay, well, we should be quiet. Okay, we'll get quiet in just a minute as soon as we're finished with this thought here. And this goes on, and so you struggle, but I don't want to say the end result, because it's not like you reach this line, you cross the line, oh, I made it. No, it's a lifelong process that, again, as you said before, the quieting takes time. And then once you've achieved a certain level of quiet, then you start to hear the voice of God.
Yes, you do. And this is where you can hear the voice of your soul, your heart.
Yeah. And you don't have to be on a mountaintop either, by the way.
No.
In spite of the fact that I live on one. Well, can we now? I'm not sure exactly how this process works, as far as you're relating the information from the orbs. Is this something that is one concept is channeled, or is this information that comes to you and then you just speak it to us?
I just get out of the way and I open my mouth.
Okay, automatic speaking, as it were.
Yeah, automatic speaking, yes.
Okay.
So that they can say whatever they want to say.
Right.
And I have a feeling that's what you want me to do.
Well, the first thing, yes, I would like for you to, for them, to share with us what it is that they have to relate in regards to our conversation today surrounding belief and the importance of, and how can I don't want to put judgment on this, but of the right kind or the most beneficial kind of belief for us as humans.
Okay. So, you are asking us to give you an opinion, are you? Well, all right then, we shall. First of all, let us decide what is beneficial and what is not. You must have a judgment around beneficial, you see, because some people believe one thing is beneficial and some people believe another thing is beneficial. So what we're really saying here is that the belief system that you are talking about, the idea of beliefs, is nothing more than a tool that you pick up. And let us say you have four hammers in front of you, and one of them is a claw hammer, and one of them is a ball peen hammer, and then you have a wooden hammer. Which hammer do you want to use for the task that you are going to do? And you decide which hammer you're going to pick up. It does not mean that the other hammers are useless, you see. They are simply part of the whole program. So you decide which belief you want to use to take you to that place that the transmitter was talking about earlier regarding knowledge. And knowledge, again, we are not too sure that we like that word either, because it has so much to do with the mind, and yet we are using words that the English language gives us, so we will go ahead with that. So if you want to know something, you really have to experience it. And because you are the creators of your own universe, that is why we are here, to keep reminding you of that creation. When you go into this creation period, if you do not know that something is there for you, you can pretend, you can act as if, as so many people like to say, and when you are acting as if and pretending, then you are believing that it is true, and therefore you are making it true for you. That will give for you the chance to have the experience. So you want to be very sure of what you are believing in, don't you? Because what if you are believing in the devil? Well, that makes him very real for you. Or scary ghosts, then they are very real for you as well. So you want to choose what beliefs you are having so that you can actually manifest, create that in your life. So when you are asking what is beneficial, we would ask you, what is beneficial for you? Because it is only going to be relative to you, you see. It is like that relative truth, that truth that everyone is looking for, that absolute truth. And each truth belongs to each person. It is an absolute truth only to you. If there were a truth that was the absolute truth for everyone to know, they would all know it. And yet we know that this is not true. No one seems to know the same truth. Everyone's truth has a little bit of shaded color to it, much like we do. You know, there's all these different colors that people see us as, and they all think that they are seeing the only way to see us. So it is really about what is going to benefit you, and by that we mean make you feel good. Because feeling good is all that really benefits you. Any other feeling, anything that you call fear or anxiety or worry or apprehension or angst or any of those words that you like to use, none of them are beneficial to you. Even when a person believes that if they worry and worry and worry, that will keep something away, all it does, you see, is bring it to them, because that is what they are paying attention to. So when you ask for what belief is beneficial, we would ask you back, what would you like to believe is true? Make it true for yourself so that you experience it, you see. And at the same time, you will be able to create for yourself things that you have not even thought of yet. Because each piece leads to another piece, and it is on and on and on into infinity. And that is why we laugh and giggle so much, because everyone thinks that this is the only time and place, and that if they don't get it right here, then everything is going to go belly up, so to speak. And we laugh because it is only just this moment, and time does not exist. It is infinite, and you are infinite within it. You are an emanation as we are, and you will continue to emanate forever. So do not be too concerned about here and now. Just be sure that what you do, you are enjoying, and that what you are doing is benefiting you and making you feel good in all of the little cells of your body, because it is all about joy, you see. That is the only reason there is any reason to be here. There is never a reason for anything besides the joy. It is only the attachment that you have to things being a certain way that causes there to be a lack of joy. And because we do not have any attachment, all we can do is laugh and appear wherever we appear. In all places, there is no particular place that we are everywhere. And you can see us whenever you wish. Take many pictures, we will be there. And at the same time, know that all we are doing is mirroring for you that which you are. Because you are the same light that we are. And that is all that you need to really be. That and nothing more.
It is good to feel good. Tony Elizabeth Sarah is my guest, and we're hearing from the Orbs as they share with us information that is available through, I would say, the website of sacredspaceswa.com. The book is The Call, Awakening the Angelic Humans, and, of course, she also has an accompanying CD. It is entitled A DNA Reawakening. We encourage you to check out some of this information. Some of it may sound a little strange. I would have to say that if I'd heard this maybe 15 or 20 years ago, I would say, okay, you go ahead and just thank you so much.
Enjoy yourself.
Thank you so much for coming, and we'll be talking to you later. And I'm not saying that it's something that I wholeheartedly just wrap my arms around and my brain can wrap around it and I fully understand it and comprehend it and it's assimilated in every cell of my body. No, because there is still that series of beliefs even within me that I am working to shift away from. And I guess maybe I should redefine the not so much the definition of belief, but more of what is beneficial for the continued ascending of man to his or her or its best destiny, shall we say, in its evolutionary process.
Okay, I'm going to speak as me for a minute here because mm-hmm. you just hit one of my buttons.
Uh-oh.
It's good. It's,
okay.
It's fun. I just sit back and laugh because I know it gets everybody in an uproar. I personally, how else could it be, feel that the whole idea of enlightenment and ascension is a bunch of junk.
Okay.
I believe that people are using that idea to keep from being what they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like saying, I really want to be this, except it's in the future, so I don't have to be it all the way right now because I'm working towards it and I'm trying to get there and any day now, and it's always out there.
Interesting.
And in reality, yeah. If we are truly God, which I truly believe we are, then we already are enlightened and quote-unquote ascended, whatever that's supposed to mean, short mm-hmm. of the Christian faith.
Mm-hmm.
And there is nothing more to do than to be it always, to be in that space so that every, and this goes again to quieting the mind so you can actually hear your own thoughts, so that every thought that comes up, every feeling that you have in your body is, quote-unquote, bounced off of that concept. And then you know whether you're truly being what you are, or whether you're, and I don't mean you personally, but I'm talking about everybody, or whether your ego personality is what's in charge, because the ego personality is looking for separation. It wants to be the top dog on the heap. It wants to be known. It wants, it uses every means available to make sure that people notice it, and that the personality of, like the Tony personality, the Richard personality, et cetera, it can take over and be very justified in what it's doing and make us feel as though we are doing the right thing, when in fact all we're really doing is trying to make more of it. And not that the ego personality is bad, it's simply that it's our individuation. And it is so filled with fear because it knows that it is unstable. It knows that it is terminable. It knows that I'm not going to be Tony always. I will go on, but Tony will cease to exist in this plane, and that's personally fine with me, except that for most people, a lot of ego personalities don't like that idea.
Yeah. Well, you change vehicles is all you're going to do. You're going to go from a Volkswagen to a Mercedes, maybe.
Exactly.
You know.
And so because the ego personality for most people is so afraid of that change of vehicles that it holds on to whatever it needs to hold on to, including the idea that someday I will be enlightened, someday I will be ascended, and I won't be experiencing all of these things I'm experiencing. Well, you're going to keep experiencing them until you believe you don't need to experience them anymore.
Mm.
And that this whole idea of a place to go, it just, I can't sit with it. I can't accept it, because there's no place to go. We're home. We are.
It goes back to what I've heard time and time again over the years. We are human beings, not human going to be, or human were.
Exactly.
We're where we are, and this is it, right here now.
Did you happen to see the video that's out right now? I can't remember the lady's name. I think her name is Julie. It was on TED.com. It was about the doctor, the scientist who had the stroke.
No, I missed that.
Oh, my gosh, I have to send it to you. It's going around the Internet like crazy. Everybody's trying to get everybody to look at it, and I watched it. It's short. It's like 18 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
She's a scientist who studied the brain, I guess she still does, who had a stroke. And during the stroke, she got to watch herself stroking. And because she's a scientist and she's always been very linear, working on brain science, she went totally into the right side of her brain. Absolutely, so that she could watch this person that she's known herself to be and everything that she's experienced from this other place within her own mind.
Wow.
And then she came back, and she talks about all the things she's experienced. Well, everything that she's talking about experiencing, I experienced in a mystical experience, and I did not have a stroke.
Now, are we talking about an out-of-the-body experience?
It's in the body experience. You're totally in the body. She's talking about not being able to dial the phone, not being able to understand print.
Oh, I see.
That's exactly what happened to me. I looked at the print, and it was nothing but these pixels and squiggles, and all of a sudden, she realized when she finally got taken care of and in the hospital and all of the things to try and make sure she didn't die, she realized that she had been in herself, capital S, and now she's taking this message out to everybody saying, you've got to stop thinking so hard. You're killing yourself. It's just, it's awesome. I mean,
wow.
It's just this 18 minutes of this woman up there who just came out of this a couple of years ago, really just talking about it.
I'll have to check that out. And I'll ask you, who are listening, to check out Tony Elizabeth Seurat, the website, sacredspaceswa.com. The book is called The Call, Awakening the Angelic Human. Tony, I want to thank you for joining us. Stay with us. We're going to come back after this short break and wrap up the program. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Tell Me Your Story is the name of our program. My guest has been Tony Elizabeth Seurat. Tony, I want to thank you so much for sharing of yourself, and thank the Orbs as well for sharing from their point of view and perspective. And we look forward to having you back on in the near future and encouraging people to get more information about what you're up to.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it very much.
And I want to let our listeners know that we have, as always, another guest coming up next week. And the author of Spirit Speak And it is knowing and understanding spirit guides, ascenders, as it's referred to here, ghosts, angels, and the divine. Ivo Dominguez Jr. is going to be my guest. He's the author of the book, Spirit Speak, and we'll be talking with him about all of these various elements and realms that, and maybe the orbs come into that same category, Tony, I don't know. Maybe I'll put that to him and see if that's where that comes from, if all of these elements are part of the same thing. And I have a feeling he probably will say yes.
I believe it.
Well, again, Tony, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you for joining us. I want you to stay right where you are. This is Tell Me Your Story. We'll be back next Saturday at this same time, 3 p.m., and we encourage you to join us. And, as always, love to all. Have a great day.